Peanuts Gallery is brought to you by a large Eastern syndicate. A large Eastern syndicate. We run Christmas. We run everything.
Once I have written a theme song, it will go here.
This is Peanuts Gallery. I'm Molly Lewis.
And I'm Josh Kagan.
And we are joined today by a special return guest, our first return guest, Nicole Deeker. How's
Yay!
It going?
Hey, it's going really well. I'm so glad you all had me back.
Well, this is an exciting and momentous podcast because this is our first recorded in Seattle.
It's true.
In our Seattle studio. We have studios all around the country. And the reason for that is that the three of us literally just came back from the Taproot Theater Company's live seasonal production of A Charlie Brown Christmas, which was wonderful.
And I mean, it's not that we had low expectations necessarily.
Oh,
but
I did.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm a cynical jerk. When I hear children's theater and I hear adaptation.
Community theater. Black box theater. It had all these buzzwords.
Yeah.
No. But I mean, we got to set some things straight. Taproot is not a community theater.
Was that true?
Yes. No, Taproot is not a community theater. I have looked up their audition information. They do not let anyone in.
No, there was actually nobody on the stage. They just wheeled out a screen.
Some cardboard cutouts.
Our standards are so high. No, but I think Molly and I were both concerned when we hear adaptation of a thing for children's theater. That means like loud, shrill, hammy second string actors. And also, what are they going to add to it to make it an adaptation? And what they added to it was 10 minutes of instrumental jazz at the beginning and then just did the text, which was great. But before we get into that, we have Nicole here. Nicole, do you have any like memories or thoughts about the Charlie Brown Christmas special, like from your childhood, or did you grow up watching it?
Oh, absolutely. No, we'd watch, I think, three of them stick out as must watch every year. There was the Charlie Brown Christmas special, the Garfield Christmas special, and the one with those mice that they have to fix the clock.
The night before Christmas.
Yes. So no, I watched it every year. I mean, what else were we going to do? We didn't have internet.
It's true.
A Charlie Brown Christmas.
The TV presented it.
Because there's nothing. There's nothing else, children of the 70s and 80s. Besides being forced to watch it, or just it was either that or nothingness, pleasant memories of it?
I think so. I mean, I was always struck, and I'm trying to remember if this was actually something I felt as a child or something I have layered over it as an adult. But there's always this understanding that Christmas is both happy and sad. And Charlie Brown nails that.
Yes.
He gets that. It's the first thing he says, and the whole thing just lays it right out.
Yeah.
Everyone's happy. I'm not happy.
Yeah.
No.
Except in this universe, I watched the special again the other night when it was shown on the American Broadcasting Network. What really struck me is how relentlessly dour it is. It's not until like three or four, because I found a transcript online. It's about 3 minutes, 4 minutes, which in TV time is forever, before anyone says anything nice. And it's about snowflakes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's snowing. And that's something nobody craps at. And then seconds later, Lucy's like, these are terrible. It is a relentlessly dour and angry special, although I might just be bringing my own shit to it. And that was another concern that I had about the play, which is, are they going to tart it up in such a way that this undercurrent of soul-crushing depression goes away? Or are they going to go the other way with it? And is it going to be a slog?
Right.
Like watching a production of a Cowboy Junkies record.
Sure.
And they struck a really nice balance. Mm-hmm.
It definitely was not as understated as the, there's something kind of mellow and very dry about the TV special. And because they were in a room talking over children with occasional sort of vocal outbursts, they kind of had to ham it up a little more, but the text was the same.
Yeah.
And
they're actors.
Yeah.
This was certainly the first time that I had heard or seen this special performed by people who could put sentences together.
Yeah.
And not, they weren't just kids in a little recording. It was like, okay, now say and.
Yeah.
Okay, now say commercial. Commercial cut. So you actually got to see, at the expense of sounding like a goof, a little more of the emotional journey of the characters.
Yeah, well, because they were constantly in view. There was no cutting between. And so they had to kind of make a dotted line between, in my scene, I'm talking about this and feeling like this. And then you're on stage and they're kind of like emoting like, oh, I'm disappointed at what Lucy just said. Yeah. There's all this like connective tissue.
There was. And you actually got more. Charlie Brown in the special, in the animated special, is a drudge. I mean, he really is. And you never get the sense that he is trying to find a silver lining mm-hmm. or anything. Like, he pays lip service to, like, you know, I want to do this, but it just, but you get the sense that he's just sort of paying lip service to being the same as everyone else, but deep down is like, this is garbage. Mm-hmm. There was a really nice moment in the play where Snoopy is getting his little doghouse ready for the contest. And Charlie Brown's like, what's going on? Snoopy hands him a piece of paper. And the first line of it, and again, it's supported by the text, is find the true meaning of Christmas. And the guy who played Charlie Brown had just enough of a rise to his voice where you got the sense that Charlie Brown was very excited that this piece of paper was going to have the true meaning of Christmas on it. Find the true meaning of Christmas, and then it's just like, win money, money, money. And it was nice.
Yeah.
It was nice to see that Charlie Brown wanted to better himself.
And because I grew up, I watched the animated special every year, and watched it several times every year, watched it between Christmases, and the way that I process things is, like with Star Tours and with other things I very much appreciate, is I memorize them. And so I know this whole special and all the text, but it occurred to me as I was watching this that I also know the cadence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I can sing it like a song, basically. And it hadn't occurred to me that there could be other line reads on this text.
Oh, absolutely. Because, again, actors.
Actors.
Professional trained actors. Nicole, were there any moments from today's performance that you found stood out? And if so, did it make you think of anything from the special differently?
I was struck, you know, first of all, when you see Charlie Brown and Linus at the beginning, and the costumes are done in such a way that they mimic the cartoon. You know, they mimic the animated special. The brick wall looks like the animated special. Mm-hmm. And the voices that come out of their mouths are different. And I was like, oh, yeah. You know, because it would be really easy. We're like, Christmas, da-da-da-da-da, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't remember the actual word, so that's, yeah, everything is da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know?
I think there's something wrong with me. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't. And so right away, I was engaged because I was listening for something new, you know? And I guess I didn't really answer your question. I would say the whole thing.
Okay.
Particularly the relationships between characters, which were not, you know, again, it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, mm-hmm. and they don't actually really react to each other.
No,
so much.
Because it has the average bar coaster is more animated than the animation.
Yeah,
in
it's a radio
Christmas.
Play with visuals, basically.
And this was not. So every time Lucy was doing anything, for the most part, she was doing it for Schroeder's benefit. Mm-hmm. That especially came across in the dance breaks, of which there were many, mm-hmm. and I could have done with more. Mm-hmm. That you got the idea that when Lucy was dancing, she was dancing specifically for Schroeder. When Frida was dancing, she had her mirror up, but you really got that Frida was just like, it's not that she was checking her hair or anything. She's just like, I'm the most interesting person in the room. Of course I'm going to look at me. The whole thing was just fascinating, and it actually made me like the special more. I watched it again last night, and we all sort of have it memorized now, like the people on the Fahrenheit 451 island, who've committed a single book to memory. It was nice to see this stuff brought out anew. It was nice to see people acting with purpose. And I feel like the message didn't get smooshed.
Yeah.
It's still very much a show and a special about, like what Nicole said, Christmas is happy and sad. And I don't know if I knew that as a kid before I watched the special. Like, it's hard. It's a real long time ago for me now. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if until I saw this, if I had the idea that Christmas is a melancholy time.
I mean, I think for me it was around the time I sort of figured out the Santa thing.
Right.
you know, spoiler alert, podcast listeners.
Just one guy spits out his tea. What?
But my sister hadn't, right? So Christmas for me became, I had to pretend an emotion that was not real, that I believed in Santa and that I was excited about Santa, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is going to be going on every year.
Spoiler alert. And for everything else, too.
You know, so I don't know what Charlie Brown's relationship is to Christmas or performative emotion. But when he's like, man, I feel sad and I should feel happy. That's sort of the whole thing.
Yeah, that's especially mm-hmm. me this year. And mm-hmm. I bet I'm speaking for everyone at this table. The first time I was in the car the other day and Kayla had the all Christmas music channel on because 'tis the season. And John Lennon's War Is Over came on. And ooh. Usually that is a song that feels like that's my favorite Christmas song. And this year I was like, Christmas is going to be weird this year. The Christmas season is going to be weird this year. I needed to see this show today.
And it's the nice thing, too, about this particular production was, you know, we kind of read the Christmas is Happy and Sad into the animated special as we watch it. And we kind of can't read it as we did when we were kids, which was just, I thought it was just about that, all that time you have to kill between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Right.
But it was nice to, we sat kind of at the back of the theater. And kind of, we were sort of above the house looking down. And it was nice to be behind all these children who were reacting to this production and to kind of look at it through the lens of all these kids and yep. how kids react to these jokes and these plot points, because I haven't sat down with a kid and watched that special in forever.
Yeah, none of us have children that we know of, certainly.
No.
And it is, I think it's a bigger point that I feel like when I experience like nostalgic or children's entertainment, it is very rare, if ever, that it is in the company of an actual child or a theater full of children. So it was a great way to sort of, it really reinvigorated my love of the special, because I found myself the other night just sort of like, all right, here's all this again, and there's that guy, and then skate around and flunk, and they're dancing.
It's like this quiet, melancholy, like Rocky Horror in your head, you know? There's like a part where you throw toast, and there's a part where, you know, you yell along to the...
Yeah.
But just kind of in this like... There's a commercial, you know, like.
Well, that's another thing, because everyone could actually act. Because I was really trying to watch it with as fresh eyes as possible. And it helped that it was a really wonderfully done production. Set design, perfect costumes, perfect. Even down to the little dinky tree. Great. The idea in the special that Charlie Brown just sort of pulls out of thin air, like, Christmas is commercial and everybody thinks that. And it kind of in the special, I feel like comes out of nowhere. But at least in this, because you get right off the bat that Charlie Brown, I feel like Charlie Brown's sort of action in this show, his want to like Christmas the way that everybody else does. And then in the first act, you know, nominally breaking this down into acts, in the first act, he talks to his friends. And none of them give them the answer that he wants. Mm-hmm. And it's all tied into money and things. Nobody ever, and Charlie Brown never says, why does everybody only want money and things? And the weird sort of slip up is that he keeps calling it commercial. I interpreted that differently. Which is like, oh, why is he saying commercial? Why does he keep saying that? And the word, in this performance, the word that I sort of replaced in my head was like material.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if they had just said material, then we wouldn't have years of confusion as to...
Charlie Brown doesn't know what commercialism means.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but as soon as you sort of see it through, like, Lucy, what do you want? Oh, I want money in real estate. Sally, what do you want? Oh, I want money. I want 10s and 20s. Snoopy, what do you want? I want to win this thing and win money. Although it was really nice. There was a little moment they built in at the very end. When they, you know, Charlie Brown's like, oh, my tree is garbage. I'm going to go throw myself in the lake or whatever. Everybody comes back and looks at Charlie Brown's tree. And there's a little moment where Snoopy sees he's won first place. And he's like, oh, nice. And he's like, oh, Snoopy really wanted to win this. I'm happy for him.
Yeah.
It seems like a thing he wanted. But it made me a lot less cynical about it.
Yeah.
And I think over the years, and just because I have a dark heart and no soul. I think over the years, the Charlie Brown Christmas in my head, even though I love it and I watch it every year, is something that I found myself taking a little for granted.
Sure.
And not really deriving No, there's no more. It's sort of a husk that has been sucked dry of joy, like the holiday season itself.
Sure. Yeah. Now, I do wonder if, I don't know when this adaptation was written, but I would imagine within the last 10 years, if even that far out.
Sure. I'm sure we could look it up or something.
Yeah, because
it didn't say, I wanted to find that page in the program. It was like, this was written by Eric Schaefer, like in 1999 or whatever. Yeah. You know, I wanted that thing and it wasn't in the program.
But it's, because the special is 1960, whatever.
1965?
Yeah. And they've had, I think, enough time to streamline it. It seems like, because, like, the little thing with Snoopy going, like, hey, look, I won, and then them taking his doghouse apart to decorate the tree, because that's the thing about the animated special, is they don't really have his blessing to do that. They're just like, well, we'll just take what's ours,
yeah,
dog. But they kind of... Yeah, and Snoopy wasn't even there, I don't think. He shows up later.
Yeah.
But... And the way they did the tree transition was just, mwah, just so beautiful.
Yeah, this is going to fall into dancing about architecture territory,
yeah,
but
no,
they definitely did just stand in front of the tree and wave their
shoulder
arms in
shoulder.
The air like they just didn't care, and then switched it out with the real tree, and it was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It was as jumpy and herky-jerky and unnatural as it was in the special. And this play walked a really nice line between... kind of recreation and sort of doing its own thing.
Yeah.
The sound work was fantastic. Every snowball thrown went flip in just the right way.
And I don't think we've mentioned yet that the who they cast as Schroeder and Pigpen actually played piano and upright bass and scored the whole thing with the original compositions.
And that's super important. Like, that is like the third main character in this is the music. Mm-hmm. And that, and the guy who played Pigpen, who, by the way, suitably filthy. Oh, that was another actor moment that I really liked. When Charlie Brown, in the sort of first act, when Charlie Brown's just walking around telling everybody why their shit stinks.
Yeah.
Hey, Violet, you didn't send me a card. Hey, Pigpen, you're disgusting. Why does nobody like me? It's weird. But Charlie Brown says to Pigpen, you're the only person I know who can raise a cloud of dust in a storm. And Pigpen takes a step back and smiles like, that's right, motherfucker. I sure can. I'm filthy.
You don't know anybody else? Good.
There's real pride to it.
Thanks.
Thank you. And then it sets up his character very nicely for the scene with Frida, where he's still like, hey, just in case you're wondering, I'm still terrific. I'm fantastically filthy. How did the Jesus and Bible stuff land on the two of you? Presented by flesh and blood humans as opposed to by cartoon characters.
See, I just saw it as, like, basically, like, you know, the human nativity they set up in front of churches where, like, I don't go, oh, that's the Virgin Mary. I go, that's a high school child who is dressed like the Virgin Mary.
I meant specifically Linus's speech.
I couldn't see it in its context. I just was, like, sort of picturing the frame from the TV special in my head and comparing the two. And so I wasn't really, I mean, it didn't seem to land on the kids that were listening, you know?
Right. But as we were talking about beforehand, I think it was very tiny children there. And I think they're still like shapes and colors.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, shapes and colors, my favorite. I love both those things.
Yeah.
And not a lot of the words were landing. But there was for me a little like, I felt a, it's odd. Again, I loved this production. And if you see Charlie Brown Christmas, you know that in the third act, Linus is going to quote the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
It felt a little different. It felt slightly more religious-y than it did, because in the special, it is a vaguely animated bar coaster sort of phonetically saying words.
Yeah.
Whereas this, I was like, oh, this is a church play. Like, this is, it's a religious text. Like, this is because Charlie Brown wants to know what the true meaning of Christmas is, and Linus is like, it's this. And having a flesh and blood human sort of speaking the words of the Bible, it didn't make me mad or sad, but it definitely felt more like, oh, this was the whole point of this show, which is to deliver this message.
Well, here's the other thing, too, is in the animated special, you really are mostly looking at Linus with occasional wide shots where you can see the other kids are listening. But there's also the very wide shot where you can see he is speaking into an empty auditorium.
Yeah.
And there is nothing they can do in a production like that to convey, hey, you in this auditorium, he's speaking to an empty auditorium. He will always be speaking to the congregated audience.
Yeah.
You know, there's a congregational element to it that is absent from the TV, the animated special, and is not something they can they can't just, like, remove us from that. He's still, he's broken the fourth wall at that point.
Yeah, and they put a little reverb on his voice.
Which I thought was nice.
Which was nice, but if you haven't, there was a lot of stuff in the show that I found myself wondering, if you haven't seen this show, this special a million times, what makes sense and what doesn't? Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that I was like, it's nice that they did that, but it didn't read.
Well, it was because, you know, like you said, they were actors. They were actual actors and not children just reading. And I think the thing that works for Linus's speech in the animated special is that it sounds like he is just like, here's a quote from the Bible that I think is pertinent to your, you know, like, whereas this kid, it sounds like, you know, it's evangelism a little bit. He's sort of telegraphing the story with his voice and with his movements.
But then I go back and forth. Evangelism, evangelism or pragmatism? Which is to say, Charlie Brown's like, what is the meaning of Christmas? And Linus is like, I got this, because it's literally just this.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to know what Christmas is, it's this.
I had the same, probably a similar reaction when, you know, Linus said lights please and the spot hit him and he started talking. He was like, oh, yeah, that is true. That is literally true. You know, and then it was sort of like, hey, you know what? I know we're in the, like, the liberal, secular West Coast city, but for a large number of people, that is also emotionally true.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But then they put in that little, that thing at the end where they actually did the play, which I do not remember.
Let's talk about
epilogue.
That.
Yeah.
Then they did the nativity, but it was a weird nativity because Linus was Jesus, except he was like grown-up Jesus doing the Pietà.
Pietà, yeah.
Yeah.
For those of you who weren't in the theater with us, which is all of you,
with
the exception of Angela and Ben.
Well, the thing I was wondering about was, because the thing that always bugged me about the animated special is they start to sing Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and then it cuts them off like a measure before.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I wonder if we're going to get closure on that. And we did get closure on that, and then it goes into about, like, I don't know, a 5-minute epilogue, would you say?
Yeah, which answered, I think, all of the things we complained about last year and things we've complained about in the special, which is, well, where is this goddamn play?
There's no closure on the play. There's no closure on all these different things.
Yeah.
What about the Christmas Queen? What is that?
And, and so they did, like, a very, like, rank-and-file sort of presentation of the nativity scene, which is the only time that they let themselves lasp into true little kid voices.
Yeah.
Which is to say, sort of the sound of kids reciting, which I thought played nice lip service to the non-acting in the special.
Yeah.
And I was really glad they didn't do that the whole time, because that would be nigh unwatchable.
Yes.
And we will put it up on the website. If I am not mistaken, that entire epilogue is one of the Sunday comics, where they are all standing and they're actually doing a nativity scene. And there's that back and forth between Linus and Lucy, where Linus has this one line that he has to do, which is not, and this goes back to a conversation that you and I had last year, the idea that Linus's "This is what Christmas is" speech is the thing he was supposed to memorize.
Right, which is what I had read that into the story, but it is not at all.
That's a great, but it's a great theory.
It makes sense.
It totally makes sense. But instead, it's like one line, Linus does it, and then Linus passes out from fear and terror, and Lucy goes, "Sing, sing, for the love of God!" And then she puts on a crown and parades around as the Christmas Queen, which is... that's basically all we wanted to see.
Yeah.
We needed to know what the Christmas Queen does, and she wears a crown and she walks about.
Because there was definitely a moment after they finished Hark the Herald Angels Sing where Charlie Brown's like, all right, let's go do the Christmas play. And you and I looked at each other like, what?
Yay! What? Finally!
It was like the after the credits thing for like a Marvel movie. Just like, huh? More?
I'm here to tell you about the Doghouse Initiative. Yeah, it was, because I think both of our fears were, oh no, are they going to add songs? Are they going to add, like, lengthy monologues? Or is they didn't touch a hair on the text's head, except for the addition of the epilogue, which I can't think of another, usually when it's like, all right, let's build out this world, I immediately think of How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the movie, where it's like, well, this was 25 minutes, but I bet we can get 2 hours out of it. One of the most blood-curdling interviews I ever heard was somebody was interviewing Ron Howard, and he said, we all know How the Grinch Stole Christmas, But what we want to do in this movie is show why the Grinch stole Christmas.
Right. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
We also already know why the Grinch stole Christmas. It's in the book.
No, it's because he had a bad childhood, which we see in flashback. Terrible, grotesque, flat. No, I don't
that was
care.
The very good thing about Tim Burton's Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, yeah. too, was the extended Willy Wonka backstory. Thank you, Tim Burton.
Oh, man, it's so great that they didn't add in. There's so many, like, well, you know, Charlie Brown's parents are divorced, and that's why he... No, the epilogue really... It was just
long enough.
It was just long enough. Oh, yeah, because at that point, any time after the end of the, you know, especially if you're talking about children's theater, like, it's just, the theater is a ticking time bomb of kids who need to, like, run around and scream and pee and whatever it is children do.
Yeah, and it was nice because it kind of knocked me off my checklist of, like, yep, Christmas Queen, yep. They sang Hark the Herald Angels and decorated the tree, yep, good. What?
Yeah.
I'm out of list items.
A new thing.
Yes. Canon expands.
But it was also just a little, the nativity scene was a little weird, because first of all, Linus fainted, and then Sally
did the pietà
grabs
thing.
Him. Yeah, she does the pietà thing where he's leaning across her knees, and I'm like, okay, so she's the Virgin Mary, and Linus is both baby Jesus and adult dead Jesus, and, you know, and everyone else forms this nativity thing, and then Snoopy starts making animal noises, and it's sort of grotesque.
It's super weird.
Yes.
But it was the only time that I felt like, weirdness leaked in.
Yeah.
It is such a razor thin wire to traverse between, the second that you dress up adults like little kids, you're in for weird. And they did a tremendous job. They were neither too cloying, nor were any of them delivering their lines with like a wink, if that makes sense. Like, don't worry. I'm an adult and I understand this is dumb. So it was neither like too cynical nor creepy until the end, but I propose that nativity plays are weird and creepy.
Yes, for sure.
And a Christmas play directed by Charlie Brown couldn't really go any other way, I would think. Like, short of disaster, short of like, you know, lights falling over and that kind of thing. You know, I think that's the tamest disaster you could hope for in universe.
Yeah. And there was nice... again, just because everybody was on stage at the same time, you actually got to see, I wouldn't say the world was built out, but there was a nice little bit of business where Linus comes to, attempts to get away, and Sally all but grabs him by the throat and is like, nope, you're staying right here, Jesus. You're not going anywhere. Yeah, the whole thing was just, it was just absolutely lovely and perfect and very well done. A needed thing for me this year. Mm-hmm. Nicole, what other thoughts did you have during the event?
Here's something I thought of at the very beginning when we had all this music and the pianist was just incredible and he was hitting every note and he sounded like the actual soundtrack, and it made me think, you know, how many of our childhood things that we keep coming back to are because of the music? You know, we don't actually want to play Super Mario, the original, again. We've played it, but we love that music. And we love this Charlie Brown music, even though the dialogue is... You know, I don't know. Is it that there's this emotional connection to a really, really good score?
I would absolutely say that. I feel like whenever anybody talks about this special... You don't go more than 2 minutes without people going Vince Guaraldi's music. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably why we also perceive the special to be melancholy, perhaps even more melancholy than it actually is, because it doesn't come across in the kids' reads.
No.
And the palette of the special is kind of blues and grays, but it's not dour. It's not underlit. It's not German expressionist. I think... For the purposes of the special, probably the music does more of the acting and heavy lifting than the animation and the performers do. So it was really interesting to see a production where everything was as good as the music.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a very good way of putting it. I feel like we should send that to Taproot and they can put it on their social media.
It was wonderful to see a version of it that fired on all cylinders. I think we all love the Charlie Brown special because we've seen it 1,000 million times and it's drummed into our cerebral cortexes. But along the way, as we've grown and gotten older, we, you know, we see the flaws and we point them out and we dedicate podcasts to pointing out the flaws
in, I don't know what you're talking about.
In cheap children's programming. It made me, it's the first Christmassy thing I've encountered this season that made me go, everything is awful, but I guess Christmas is still kind of okay. Even though I'm not a particularly religious person and, you know, and whatnot, there is going to be, even if it's just an hour, even if it's just a minute on the 25th where I go, oh, this is nice.
Yeah.
This is very nice.
Well, and I think the sort of thesis of this special in any, whatever form, you know, televised or on stage, is that Christmas is so big that it can be whatever you need it to be.
That's really important. Yeah, because, and they don't, it's interesting, the text doesn't necessarily, except for like commercial, 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 which again we understand now to be sort of a nonsense word meaning something else. The lesson at the end isn't necessary, nobody actually just says, well, we've been focusing on the wrong things, and Christmas is about coming together and holding hands and singing. Mm-hmm. And nor does Charlie Brown at any moment go like, I guess Christmas is okay. But there is just sort of that tacit agreement amongst the cast where it's like, for this split second, everything is okay. And this is all that we need.
On this one thing, we agree.
Yeah. Which I thought was really nice. Again, there's always that danger that they would build like more monologues into Charlie Brown, or he would be more explicit in what he was saying, or they'd blow out the decorating contest or some horrible nonsense like that. But it reminded me how good Schultz's writing is. Again, and that is all thanks to the power of actors. Mm-hmm. It was, I don't want to say it was perfect, but certainly I feel like it sold the material and sold the text and sold Schultz's writing in a way that, in a sort of pure chewing satisfaction way that I don't know if the special does.
I thought they were going to treat it like just a panto of the TV special, but they treated it like a play.
Yeah.
They treated it like a freestanding thing, and I really appreciate it. Sort of going back to the actors and what sort of lifting they did. Not like heavy lifting, but, you know, they carried their weight, for sure. And we've sort of talked in previous episodes about, like, you know, are any of these characters outside of Charlie Brown freestanding, or is it Charlie Brown versus this multi-headed mob? And because each person kind of had stewardship of their character, there was sort of something individual going on with each person. You felt like this is an ensemble. This
right.
is a full suite of people, not Charlie Brown versus everybody.
Hey, you haven't watched the special yet. Do you feel like you'll go into watching the special with different eyes now?
I mean, I think always. That's kind of the thing about it, is it, it changes shape based on what I need that Christmas.
Right.
You know? It's kind of this what is it, a boggart?
Oh, sure. It shows us what we most fear in our own hearts.
Yeah.
Let's pretend I don't know what a boggart is for a second.
It's that shape-shifting thing from Harry Potter that shows you the thing that you fear most.
Ah, Harry Potter. Yes, if I don't know what a thing is, chances are it's Harry Potter at this point.
I'm surprised that's our first Harry Potter crossover reference in the duration of this podcast. Season two.
Yes. Well, I think we've done it then.
I think so. In our next segment, we're going to talk to my friend Andy Cowden, who is playing Charlie Brown currently in the in a Canadian production of the same adaptation.
The same adaptation. I don't know when we're going to drop this. Hopefully it will be while, if you are in the Seattle area, you can still see this show.
Or if you're in the Vancouver, BC area, you can also see it.
Or if you have Amazon.com. You can just watch it.
You can watch the old-fashioned D version. Yeah, it's super solid. It's a great adaptation. It's a cool 40 minutes, which for attention-deficited adults like ourselves, or actual little children's, this production was bright and colorful and fun and a little bit weird. And it, like I said, gave me kind of everything. It did everything a good adaptation should do, which is have a life unto itself and make you appreciate the original more. Mm-hmm.
It was just new enough that you could sort of appraise it anew as a piece.
Closing thoughts, Nicole.
I would see it again. I'd go tonight. If I didn't have other plans, I'd be hanging out at the tap room, being like, you know, got another seat.
Just get on standby, yeah.
just like throw on a monochromatic frock and sort of quietly wander out on stage.
Absolutely.
Oh, I didn't miss Violet, by the way. They got rid of Violet
and they got rid of Shermie. They kind of lumped them. They lumped Violet into Frida.
Who was wonderful.
Frida was great.
They gave Shermie's line to Linus, which, like, the dork in me was like, I mean, that's Shermie's line. But I'm not going to stand up and be like,
there's like a raffle which child in the audience will play Shermie.
Oh, that'd be great.
Every Christmas is the same.
And we are back for our second half of our Christmas spectacular extravaganza. We opened the stockings and found Nicole Deaker, and now we're checking under the tree, we're opening the packages, and we found a big box of Andy.
Please welcome Andy Cowden. Andy, thank you for joining us.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for asking me to be part of this thing. I love this podcast.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say. And you are, I would go so far as to say, you are the first expert we've really had on this podcast. We are self-taught Peanuts experts.
You can't see right now. We're both making the air quotes so hard it's actually causing the lights in the room to strobe.
But you have steeped yourself in Charlie Brown. You are currently playing Charlie Brown in Charlie Brown Christmas at the Carousel Theater on Granville Island in Vancouver.
That's right. Yeah. We run until New Year's Eve. If your idea of New Year's Eve is coming out and seeing a kid show at 2 p.m. in the afternoon, then please come down. We'll be happy to take your money and entertain you.
That's perfect. Because
New Year's Eve is so commercial.
Yeah. I generally like to wrap up my New Year's Eve by, say, 4 o'clock. So that sounds perfect. I do a little countdown for myself. So you have – what has your experience been before – I figure like, you know, any actor, you saw an audition in the thing. You were like, oh, that looks like a good way to spend my holiday season, make a couple bucks. Were you a Peanuts guy before this? What's your – a little bit of –
Your Peanuts experience.
Peanuts experience?
Yes.
Yes.
I've got one of those. I don't know exactly what it is, but I know that I have one. And I read the strip growing up in the comics, and it was one of my favorites. It's one of the ones that I saved for last. I didn't read it in order. I jumped around the page a bit and saved Peanuts and I think BC. Does anyone remember BC?
Yes, BC. It was like drawn by the same guy who did like Hagar the Horrible and High and Lois and Beetle Bailey, sort of that connected universe. And is the gentleman who rode around on a rock.
Yes.
Yes. Of which there is, by the way, from the 1970s, a BC Christmas special whose very title contradicts itself.
No kidding. What is it?
Well, it's called a BC Christmas special.
All right.
You do the math. Yeah, there's what the fuck are they celebrating?
Of course, yeah.
So you grew up reading the strip, and were you I'm going to watch the special every year kind of family?
You know, I didn't start watching the specials until about 11 years ago, because 11 years ago it was my first real theater job out of acting school, and I did a production of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. It was great, and we did the new Andrew Lippa version, the one with My New Philosophy and Beethoven Day, which are lovely songs, and interesting music-wise, because there's the baseball song, which in the original production was a slow waltz, and in the Andrew Lippa version, the one that was done with Kristen Chenoweth, they sped it up, that you'll never get da-da-da-da-da-da baseball game, and it really picks up the pace. It's a lovely adaptation.
Yeah, and that adds the character of Sally, if I'm not mistaken, which
yes,
is the Christian Chenoweth part. Yeah. So, and who did, and did you play Charlie Brown in that?
I played Charlie Brown 11 years ago.
Oh, so you're like this is like your James Bond. This is like this is that you are like the British Columbia's go-to Charlie Brown.
You know, I think so, because what you were saying, you know, did I apply for this gig? I didn't. I had done a job with Carousel Theater last year we did a production of James and the Giant Peach, which was very nice and fun to do. And the artistic director came up to me and said, "We need a Charlie Brown. Would you like to be Charlie Brown? You seem like a depressive. Could you please be a sad 8-year-old for us?" And I said, "Sure."
How do you get into the role of a depressed 8-year-old? Like what do you bring to that?
Well, this is very interesting. There was a surprising amount of table work for this play. Usually with a children's, like you're doing Shakespeare or Brecht or something, you'll spend a couple days with the cast around the table at the beginning of rehearsal going, "Well, what do we think about existentialism? You know, what do we think about that sort of thing?" But
that's sort of applicable for this.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that's exactly what we did. We talked about how the characters relate to each other and the interesting, poignant, sad philosophical moments and like the strips where he's just awake in bed at night, just thinking about his future and how other people think about him. I mean, that's very, you don't get that a lot in children's shows.
No.
No, certainly not.
It's fascinating to me that you've played this part twice, and you said with a decade apart?
Yes, 11 years. I played it in summer of 2005.
Could you talk a little bit about your process going into it, revisiting the part, as opposed to how you approached it in 2005?
Yes. I was surprised at the amount of residue. And this happened a couple years ago because in my senior year of high school, I played Pierpont Finch in How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, in like a community theater production. And then in 2013, I played it again professionally, at 26. And that I was surprised at how I was saying the lines exactly the same as I did 10 years ago. And I thought, no, I went to acting school. I've got to be able to do it a little differently. I must have learned something between then and now. So I had that experience and trying to get out of the, oh gosh, because I'm saying it, I'm parroting, my 17-year-old self. I gotta find something a little deeper in it. And so I was more cognizant of that playing Charlie Brown again, seeing what the residue was. I found that the walk was the same. Our choreographer had the same idea of having these tiny little steps with the arms very, very dead at the side and lifting up the toes as we run along. So that was the same. The voice change, I think I was a little more nasal. For some reason I had this idea when I was 18 playing the part that he had to be way up here, and it was a horrible idea. So
I'm no fan. That sounds more like a Christmas elf.
That's like a
that guy who wanted to be a dentist.
The Peabody and Sherman Christmas special.
That's right. Exactly. Getting into it, it's funny. It's hard to do research because as an adult male, you're discouraged from just sitting at playgrounds by yourself and watching the kids.
There's squares.
You'll say.
Yeah. There's something a little creepy about that. So, from afar, trying to look at their posture is ramrod straight, which is really cool. And their sort of intense way of looking at things and thinking about myself when I was eight years old, I was the kind of kid that wandered. And I don't know if everybody had this same experience when they were a kid, but at recess, I would just wander around the playground by myself, like I was a ghost of a child, just going from one group to the other, watching people do things and with no allegiance to any side. It was very strange.
Andy, that is the most relatable thing I've heard probably all day.
Well, it's interesting. We just recorded a podcast that's going to come later in the season, but we were talking about this theory that in all of the Charlie Brown specials, it seems like the kids just walk in circles around the town until they run into another group of kids.
It's not like they're beat.
And then the scene starts. So that's very child behavior. How difficult was it to get the voices and I don't know how many times you dipped into watching the special for research, but like Molly and I were saying, we've both watched it so many times.
There's a cadence to it. There's a melody about it.
Did you have to ignore that? Did you have to sort of put it out of your head, or how much did you build off of the special, if at all?
Well, personally, I took whatever I stole whatever I liked, basically. I thought, looking at it and what I could remember, like, there are moments, there are weird moments in fiction that people remember and often incorrectly, in the same way that Darth Vader never says, Luke, I am your father. And they never say, play it again, Sam and Casablanca. But we remember them saying that. They say something like that, but not exactly. And thinking about those sort of weird cultural false memories, what do people know about the Og? It took me a long time to get the Og. There isn't an Og in the Christmas special exactly. Charlie Brown just goes, and it's my own dog gone commercial. I can't stand it. I thought, it's Peanuts. I got to put the Og in somewhere. And for a long time, I was doing it too low and too scary. It was,
No, it's terrifying.
That's not good. But it's this sort of Peter Robbins, I'll try to do it. Og! Something like that. A little higher, a little less aggressive. So I knew I had to get those beats right. And I knew that people, because they've seen this perhaps every year since 1965, who knows, knowing that people are going to come in with certain expectations about how it should be done. And so the beginning speech, I think there must be something wrong with me, Linus. And I don't know why I can't remember it now. I did it twice today, but it was,
that's why.
I think there must be something wrong with me, Linus. Christmas is coming, but I'm not happy. I don't feel the way I'm supposed to feel. I try to keep those exactly as the Christmas special is in terms of rhythm. But otherwise, just because we're not doing it, we've got a verbatim script. There's only a couple lines that vary in the licensed version that the Schultz Estate is selling or whoever is licensing it. And we've added a few things because it's only a 25-minute show. We added a bunch of Christmas songs at the end. We added the Red Baron Flights of Fancy song with a bunch of Snoopy puppets swooping in and out on the doghouse. So it's not a completely faithful version, but I was trying to be very aware that there are people that know this by heart, not just line by line, but almost as a song, as a recorded track in their head. And they'd have an expectation about how these things are supposed to go. And if you don't do it just right, they'll be disappointed. So keeping that in mind and still having the freedom of, if I feel like it should be done a certain way, if it was a weird cut in the cartoon, I should think of that as like a soft point. That's something I can play with, and maybe try to find something appropriate, like within character and within the world of the cartoon, but that would sort of make an easier transition, make it make more sense in terms of the way the character is moving through the story. I've taken liberties there. Our Sally, with the writing the letter, she's fantastic. Her name is, Rebecca Talbot. And she came in the first day saying it exactly as Sally did it in the cartoon. It was the funniest damn thing I've ever heard. A 35-year-old woman speaking exactly like a 6-year-old, even with that weird sort of hiccup she has with the, all I want is my fair share. That weird,
They literally recorded her one word at a time, if I'm not mistaken, because
that's right.
she could not get it all out at once. So I'm sure to try and do a direct cover version of that made her sound like an insane person.
But the best sort of insane, you know?
Yeah.
And it was interesting reading the Wikipedia, because why not? Try to figure out how these kids talk, because there is a weird sort of cadence. And looking at the Wikipedia page, noticing that Bill Melendez often would recite the lines to the kids, and they would recite the lines back, because some of them couldn't read, or it was just easier to record. Bill Melendez had a Latino accent. And as Peter Robbins is quoted as saying, I can hear myself imitating the accent a little bit, because it's probably why the way he says depressed off the top of the cartoon instead of depressed.
Fascinating.
Because I won't do the Latino accent. I don't want to offend people. But
just but you can sort of,
yeah. You can maybe hear that.
You mentioned, so the production we saw the other day had what I feel like is the classic You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, Snoopy, which is to say a lanky Bill Hader-ish gentleman wearing all white and some ears coming out of a baseball cap. Your work, he was fine. He was great. Yeah.
Good.
We did have that that reaction also, because he came out, they wore Heelys for the skating sequence. Mm-hmm. But the cast put on Heelys later or deployed the Heelys later, but Snoopy came out on rollerblades and we went, oh no.
What a rip. Oh no, he's Poochie from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
But you're working off a puppet, which I've certainly in all of the You're a Good Man, Charlie Browns, it's a dude singing and dancing and whatnot. How was working off of a puppet? And that seems like it, for a 25, 30 minute play, that seems like it adds layers of technical complexity to it.
Yes. Yes. There are several Snoopy puppets in our show, made by this, wonderful woman back east. I'm sorry. I can't remember her name. Anyway, we ship them in. Let's see how many puppets there's. We have a marionette that comes on for the skating scene, that helps him glide around the stage, which is very nice. We use that for some other things. We have a hand, puppet with what would be called a rod puppet. Although I think he didn't like the rod. We've got this fantastic actor named Alan Zinnick, who's a wonderful comic, and, he's off and on. He's the poor guy. He's like 54 and he's crouching and he's on his hands and knees doing these Snoopy puppets. They're lovely things. They're, how large would it be? But it's a rod puppet like Kermit the Frog. So it's just the torso and the head and some arms that he moves around.
It looks kind of Piggy sized from the website.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's that. I prefer that. I mean, you can do You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, and have the full size Snoopy who sings and dances and talks. And that's good too. But there's something very, very charming about Snoopy not talking in that sort of Wallace and Gromit dog relationship where there's a lot of subtext or it's just gestures and moving around. There's a wonderful, I saw this wonderful, video. Where Bill Melendez is talking. He's talking about Snoopy and how it took him a long time to find the sound of Snoopy and how Schultz was like, no, he should just speak the thought. Charlie Brown should voice Snoopy's thoughts. And Bill Melendez didn't like that. And, it took him a long time. So he recorded him making noises and fiddled with the sound so it would be a little higher. And that became the Snoopy sound. And we've been fairly faithful to that. Occasionally, Alan throws in the odd word.
That's great.
But he keeps pretty faithful to the cartoon in that it's just sound effects and I much prefer that. It's the kids believe it a little more when it's this puppet and the puppet work he's doing is so wonderful. It really seems very alive up there. When we introduce ourselves after the show, we do a little talk back. Alan says, I'm Snoopy's assistant.
I'm his personal assistant.
And the kids want, we've had questions, why does Snoopy need a personal assistant? Which is very sort of, is there a Santa Claus sort of territory? I don't know if I want to spoil it for them, but.
Well, the easy answer is that Woodstock hadn't been added to the canon yet.
Yeah.
This is true. And we've done that. Unfortunately, I don't know if it's, some purists would poo-poo it, but we do have a Woodstock that he flies the Red Baron plane in our little pastiche.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. So that's nice. But yeah, I'd much prefer the puppets than to a human being talking. It's nicer to relate to. You can really pretend it's a dog.
And in defense of Bill Hader guy from the Seattle production, he did not talk. He just did the like, yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, he wasn't like, hey everyone, it's me, Snoopy. Let's take a break. I'm going to tell you what I'm thinking.
Look, I can do a penguin. I make a very good penguin.
I'm terrific at it. Charlie Brown is such a, he can be such a drip, and it's an intro, like, if you're doing, like, Chekhov, you know, you play depressed characters, and people sort of walk in, and that's the world. If you're seeing Three Sisters, you know you're not going to see a knee slapper, regardless of whether or not he called it a comedy. But you go into Charlie Brown Christmas, you're going to a children's play, and you want kind of, you're a parent, you're a kid, you want good times, you want Snoopy, you want hijinks. Was it difficult? Is it difficult to sort of toe the line between playing a deeply existential, potentially sad child and still making it fun for the kids, if that makes sense?
No, absolutely. It was a little difficult, and we did talk about that. This is a surprisingly deep show with deep characters. I was describing it in an article for the local paper, the Vancouver Sun. We were talking about, well, who's this show for? And I said, well, on the surface, it seems like a show for kids, and it's not really a show for kids. It's a show about children for everybody. And there are these marvelous deep themes that children can relate to. There's a marvelous Neil Gaiman quote to say, when you're putting together work for children, you need to write something that's intelligent enough for the children, but with enough action for the adults. It's this, you've got to be able to make, it's got to be really true. It's got to be some of the best work you can do, because kids can spot a phony immediately. There's this wonderful story in The Company where there's somebody's coming on with a foam rock and pretending it's very heavy, and a kid in the back row shouting, "Fake rock, fake rock, fake rock," for like 3 minutes. They can spot. If you're not doing it, if you're not really committing to it, the kids will call you out on it. So you have to find a way to make it as honest as possible. And with Charlie Brown, I figured out early on that his emotional arc matches the pattern on his shirt. It's up and down in a constant sort of, there's optimism. There's always an internal spring of optimism that I can do it. If I just try really hard and I just keep at it and I believe I can get there, but then he fails but the failures are real. He goes down. Oh, this is terrible. Nobody likes me. Why should I even try anymore? I don't know why, but somehow manages to get on the upswing again. It's this constant back and forth between I can do it and I can't do it. I can do it. I know I can't do it. That makes the character so appealing and so long lasting. So going through the arc of the show, he starts with, I don't know, Linus, I think there must be something wrong with me. And we talk about depression. It's like the modern understanding of depression was a little different than how it was in 1965. 1965 is now we have clinical depression. Now it's a sort of chemical problem. And it's a complicated thing. You know, people can dive in and out of depression. This is true. But looking at the script, I think when Charlie Brown says he's depressed, he's a little bit of an unreliable narrator. I think he is just confused. He is disappointed because he doesn't feel the way he's supposed to feel, the way he felt last year. And we've all done this. There's a point, and it usually happens later on, maybe when you're 11 or 12, when you think, oh gosh, Christmas isn't as exciting as it was 5 years ago. Why don't I feel great and excited? Why do I feel like, oh, I guess we're doing this again? And maybe it's early on. Maybe it's like early December where all the decorations come out, but there's not that warm family feeling where you get to see your relatives you haven't seen since last year. And there's not this coming together. There's this very, you just see things and it becomes what is this commercialism that he's talking about? What is this feeling of all this stuff with no meaning behind it? And that's where we get into existentialism. What is the meaning to all of this?
We talk about this a lot.
And so much of Charlie Brown's struggle in the specials, because we've watched all the specials through the 1960s and we just started the 1970s today. And so much of Charlie Brown's problems is he struggles with the expectations, like expectations that he holds of himself and what he thinks other people expect of him. Like, you know, my baseball team has lost 1,000 games and they think we're losers, but we're gonna, like, and it's so much what he thinks other people are projecting onto him.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Absolutely.
And expectation. It's interesting. All of the kids in the Schultz universe. And this is something that we were talking about earlier as well. You get the sense that they've learned everything. This is Angela Weber from the DoubleClicks pointed this out about Lucy. Like, everything that Lucy says sounds like she got it out of a magazine. And you get the idea that these are very, you know, this is like the first generation of very media bombarded kids. Mm-hmm. And so you get that sense that everybody in the special and in the show thinks Christmas is a certain thing because they have been told it is a certain thing. It is aluminum trees. It is
tens and twenties.
It is tens and twenties.
Yeah.
It must be a really interesting universe for you all to inhabit. Can you give us a little insight into the other actors' processes as well? Like, how is your Lucy, and what sort of table work did you and Lucy do? Because the two characters have a fascinating relationship, kind of like, you know, the ultimate frenemies.
Yes, it's very strange, especially the 180 that a lot of kids seem to, and it could be just our production that, no, it's not, because in the cartoon they all sing Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown, we're gonna do this nice thing for you, but before that it's just outright hate and intolerance towards Charlie Brown. Oh no, that guy. Oh really? Gosh, you're stupid, Charlie Brown. Wow. Like there's only at the very end where they see this little tree, which is the what's the term? Simulacrum. That's probably a big word I don't know the meaning of. But the tree The tree is the representation of Charlie Brown, and by helping the tree, they're also helping him by seeing now that's really screwed up, because the kids can't feel compassion for Charlie Brown, but they can for a tree, for a plant, but not a person.
Well, because it's a material thing, and for them, Christmas is a very material sort of affair.
Yeah.
And
Christmas is more about totemic items, I feel like. A tree, presents under the tree, a man who does not
lights
exist.
Lights and display contest.
And Santa Claus, and elves, and all of that. It's interesting that you bring that, you know, obviously when people think of Charlie Brown, they think of a guy who is being shit on by the rest of the world. But the interesting thing is, you look at like the first 5-10 minutes of that, and Charlie Brown is not, he's no innocent. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, he sees Violet and he's like, he's a dick. And he's like, thanks for the Christmas card, jerk.
Yes, and I hate doing that every day. It's so awful.
Yeah.
They
and he tears, but then he immediately, and at least you can be like, oh, well, he just saw that he didn't get any cards and, you know, he's bummed out.
He's frustrated.
But then he sees Pigpen and he's just like, Pigpen, you're a filthy piece of shit. And then goes on his way.
This is true. This is true. And as you say, we're talking about before how these are kids that they're being bombarded by media and taking a lot of new ideas and trying things out. Like the Lucy says, as they say on TV, which is a fantastic line.
Oh yeah. The first step is admitting you have a problem.
Exactly. And I feel like they're sort of trying things out. Perhaps that's the first time Charlie Brown has used sarcasm. This is my opportunity to finally try this out to see what the reaction is. And of course it doesn't go well.
I love that explanation.
That's amazing. Yeah. I heard all about this on the Jack Parr show. I think I'm going to try this out.
Don't you know sarcasm when you hear it? Do I? Oh God, do I?
And with Lucy, Lucy is a fascinating character, because she doesn't believe, well, no, she believes she is the center of the universe, but also in that sort of egotistical way in which all children sort of do. I am the Christmas queen, and this is how it's going to go. I get to play psychiatrist. I put myself in the position of power. Not the same way Charlie Brown does. Charlie Brown is searching for, I don't know, some sort of purpose through a role. I can be, instead of being nothing, I can be the manager of the baseball team, and I'm getting some sort of security through that. Whereas Lucy has a more chaotic, neutral approach to authority. Is that I'm going to play the psychiatrist now. This is what psychiatrists do. I have my booth and I have my stool, and these are all the things that make up this thing. And now I'm playing the psychiatrist. And she takes it upon herself to. I wonder if she didn't have the stand, if she'd help Charlie Brown at all, because I've given her my 5 cents and this is the role I'm playing. So now I get to help you. And that sort of, if that wasn't there before, if she was playing pirates before, then she'd be out to get me, because that's the new thing she's playing. So she's this. Yeah, in my mind, she's more of a chaotic. Maybe I'm being too reductivist.
No, because I think Charlie Brown takes comfort in institutions, and Lucy's happy to just create her own institutions. You know what I mean?
And then put Charlie Brown into puppet positions of power.
Yes,
Charlie Brown, you should be the director, because I don't want to be the fucking director.
Oh, that was the weird thing, because you said there's a core sort of 25 minutes to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then does the company have sort of license to expand on things and add, like, you've added a Red Baron sequence and you've added a Woodstock?
To be perfectly honest, I'm not sure if we are allowed the license, because there are things with Musical Theater International. You have to keep very, very strict to the book. I would inquire with Carousel Theater about that, whether we're allowed to do these things or not.
Oh, sure.
But we have done them. We've stretched to an hour. So at the, we've added things like Snoopy. We've added a sequence when instead of Charlie Brown coming over and saying, you're an awful person, Pigpen, you're the only person. A weird line too. You're the only person. I've never been able to figure it out. Maybe you guys can help me out. Pigpen, you're the only person I know who can raise a cloud of dust in a snowstorm. Is that an insult? And we're like, where is that coming? Like, it's true, but is that bad?
It's just reported in the production.
It seems commendable, really.
And in the production we saw, Pigpen took it as such.
Yeah,
oh,
like,
I see.
He was like, yeah, fuck yeah, I am. I'm filthy. I did it.
I think that's where we're going too. And we've added a sequence in which I help him build the snowman, and that's part of his.
Oh, that's
Charlie
nice.
Brown. Yeah, and Charlie Brown has these arcs of hope and disappointment, where he starts off, he starts, that was my rationale trying to figure out where this character is going, is that he's Linus, I think there's something wrong because I'm depressed. I think, well, maybe skating will help. And then I get tossed into a tree and that doesn't work out. Well, maybe I'll help Pigpen build this snowman and that doesn't work out. Well, maybe I'll look in my mailbox and that doesn't work out. And maybe I'll try sarcasm for the first time and that blows up in my face. So it's always this hope, and it's a sort of, coyote and roadrunner situation where there's always attempt and failure.
Because the production that we saw outside of the core 25 minutes, which I would imagine are just the 25 minutes of the original animated special.
Minus the Coke commercials.
They had, after they sang all of Hark the Herald Angels Sings, which I appreciated because the animated special does not resolve that. They just, like when you want them to say glory to the newborn king, they just stop and then the show's over.
Nope, that's enough Bible shit in our special.
Glory to who? You'll never know. But
tune in.
But then after they finish the song, Lucy goes, "Okay, let's go put on our Christmas play." And they like showed us what the Christmas Queen looks like, and they did some weird thing with like they made sort of an improvised nativity scene with like Linus as both child and adult Jesus. Like they did kind of this Pietà thing with Sally. Ooh. And we were like, "This is a bizarre amount of closure all at once."
but needed,
not undesirable.
Yeah,
certainly.
It didn't make me mad or sad.
But as soon as Lucy put on a crown, Josh and I both looked at each other and went, "The Christmas Queen! We get to see the Christmas Queen!"
And I'm curious if that postscript, that epilogue, is part of the official text or if that's just something that our theater did.
No, with the music that's supplied by the licensing company where we got it, there's Hark the Herald Angels Sing. And then I believe We Wish You a Merry, there's two other songs after that. There's We Wish You a Merry Christmas and, another one I think we've cut. But what we do, we do a nativity play yes, he's even a good penguin. I rush off stage to get my megaphone and meanwhile they rehearse we call it the Nativity Lotsy, where we have Snoopy, we put some ears on Snoopy and he becomes the donkey and the puppeteer who's playing Five, by the way, the character of Five, who is very, very briefly.
Five?
Oh, wait, Five makes it in?
Yeah, because he's
we got ripped off to the tune of Five.
We gotta go to Granville Island.
Wait, does that mean you have Shermie?
We have Shermie. You guys will love this. We have all of our music is live.
That's great. Same with ours
too. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. We have our own little Vince Guaraldi trio. Our Schroeder, Stephen Greenfield, plays the piano. Shermie plays the drums and Pigpen, plays the bass. So we've got our own little, Vince Guaraldi trio. I for one song play the trumpet off stage. And within the manger lot, see, when they're going to inn, they go to one inn and buzz, press the buzzer, and I play the trombone and I do the wah-wahs, the Miss Othmar.
Nice!
Which was really fun. That gets that's a lovely laugh from the crowd. It's amazing. This is weird playing, and this is tangents upon tangents upon tangents, but.
That's the business we're in, sir.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
There's, thinking about that and like the Miss Othmar bit with the trombone, there's this weird balance throughout the whole show of sincerity and irony. There's this, we're trying to recreate the cartoon, and like fill it with some sort of heart and make the characters as real as we possibly can. But there's always a winking and a nodding to the crowd and to nostalgia. And it all works, but and we don't really know we're doing it, but there is this balance between, you know, when we do the tree, when we take the decorations off the tree, there's, the whole cast stands in front of the doghouse, to mask the other tree coming on, because we just replaced the Charlie Brown Christmas tree with another one. But they're standing and waving their arms up and down like the kids do in the cartoon.
Amazing.
And that's an adult laugh every show.
Sure.
Because it's part of the cartoon, but it's also this half of the fun is us trying to imitate what the kids do in the cartoon. I have no idea what your original question was, but that's apparently the end of my talking for this portion of me talking.
Fair enough. I have a non-Charlie Brown question. It is just a practical actor question. Andy, my friend, you did two matinees today. You are surrounded by children, it sounds like 500 times a week to do this show. How are you staying not sick? I imagine that's like doing a show in a petri dish.
It is. I was very lucky in that after my visit at Desert Bus for Hope 10, I immediately got a cold, and I had that all through the last week of rehearsal and the final week of tech. So that wasn't fun, but at least I was fairly well by opening night, and so hopefully I don't get a cold between now and New Year's Eve. But otherwise, the show must go on. Even if you're vomiting, they'll keep a bucket for you, stage left and stage right. You know, you gotta either lose
the
your
equity
voice entirely,
bucket.
The equity bucket next to the equity cot.
Yes.
You gotta go on, and hopefully you don't get sick. It sucks when you're sick. Thankfully, I don't know how the tradition started, but there's always thousands of boxes of Kleenex backstage. We've got one taped to the wall, stage right and stage left. So whatever you need it for, you need to blow your nose. I often keep a Kleenex in my pocket just to mop the sweat off my face when I get a moment, because you're under those hot lights, and we're in real, insulated, winter jackets under hot lights. It is not fun.
Like no business I know.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and Desert Bus is like, you know, those parties like where everybody would get their kids together because one kid had chicken pox, and then all the kids would get chicken pox, and then they'd never. It's Desert Bus is like that, but for like grown people. Like, well, who has flu? Who has cold? Let's all get into a room.
The nerd flu.
It's kind of a flu gauntlet.
I done caught the nerd flu.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Immunize yourself. Well. Andy, we've kept you much longer than I thought we would, but this has been just gold. This has just been so much fun, and I wish we could keep you around just for days and just pick your brain.
We will absolutely to have you back to talk about an episode down the line.
I'd love to. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Yeah, thank you, Andy.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for doing this. It's a wonderful podcast you guys have got going. One of those things like Desert Bus for Hope, when I think, oh, I'm glad that exists. That's a good thing for the
world.
Well,
somebody's got to do it. All right. Happy holidays, Andy.
You too.
Well, that's that. We've got we're very excited for this next season. We've got some awesome guests that we're going to bring in. And the good news is that the 70s specials, just from what we've sort of looked at already, are super weird. And then the season premiere will be played again, Charlie Brown, with our friend Angela Weber from the Double Clicks.
Yeah, me.
I'm Josh Kagan.
I'm Molly Lewis.
And I'm Nicole Deeker.
This has been Peanuts Gallery.
Questions, comments, concerns? Tweet them at us at @peanutspodcast.
You blockheads.